Chapter 4, in which the twins discover a tree unlike any other. They tumbled down into a net of woven metal. Yelping and kicking, Jared tried to stand, but he couldn't seem to get a foothold. Abruptly, he stopped struggling and got elbowed in the ear by his brother. "Simon, stop! Look!" Glowing fungi covered the walls in patches, illuminating the faces of three small men with skin as gray as stone. Their clothes were drab and sewn from rough fabrics, but their silver bracelets, crafted in the shape of serpents, were so intricate that they seemed to slither around the men's thin arms. Their collars were woven with golden threads beaten so fine that they might have been cloth, and their jeweled rings were so lovely that each of their dirty fingers gleamed.
"What have we here? Prisoners,"
said one with a voice like gravel.
"Seldom have we any live prisoners."
"Dwarves," Jared whispered to his brother. "They don't seem very I-O-I-O," Simon whispered back. The second dwarf rubbed several strands of Jared's hair between his fingers and turned to the one who had spoken.
"Not very extraordinary, are they? The black of their tresses is dull and plain. Their skin is neither smooth nor pale as marble. I find them ill-made. We could do far better."
Jared scowled, not sure what the dwarf meant. Again he wished for the guide. He remembered only that dwarves were great craftspeople, and the iron that hurt other fairies didn't bother them. His knife would have been useless, even if it hadn't been confiscated.
"We're here for our sister," Jared said. "We want to trade."
One of them chuckled, but Jared wasn't sure which. With a creak, another dwarf positioned a silvery cage beneath the netting.
"The courting said you would come. He is very eager to meet you."
"Is he like the dwarf king or something?" Simon asked. The dwarves did not answer. One pulled on a carved handle and the net opened. Both boys fell heavily into the cage. Jared's hands and knees felt raw all over again. He slammed his fist against the metal floor. Jared and Simon were silent as they were wheeled through the caverns with cold air and wet walls. They could hear the sounds of hammers, louder and more distinct now that they were underground, and the roaring of what might have been a great fire. Overhead in the gloom, patches of dim phosphorescence showed the tips of large stalactites hanging above them like a forest of icicles. They passed through a grotto where bats shrieked from above, and the floor was dark and rank with their droppings. Jared tried to contain a shiver. The deeper they went, the colder the cavern became. Sometimes Jared saw shadows shift in the gloom and heard an erratic tapping. As they moved through a narrow corridor, past dripping columns, Jared breathed in the damp mineral scent with relief after the stink of the bats. The next chamber seemed to be filled with dusty piles of metal objects. A golden rat with sapphire eyes darted out of a malachite goblet and watched them pass. A silver rabbit lay on its side, a winding key around its neck, while a single bud of a platinum lily opened, then closed, then opened again. Simon looked at the metal rat with longing. Then they moved into a large cavern, where they saw dwarves carving statues of other dwarves into the granite walls. The sudden brightness of the lantern light stung Jared's eyes, but as he passed the dwarves, he thought he saw one of the carving's arms move. From there, they moved into an enormous space where a massive tree grew underground. The thick trunk reached up until it was lost in the shadows, branches forming a canopy over them. The air was filled with a strange metallic bird song. "That can't be a tree," Simon said. "There's no sun. No sun means no photosynthesis." Jared peered at the trunk. "It's metal," he said, realizing that the leaves were all of beaten silver. High in the tree, a copper bird beat its mechanical wings and stared down with cold jet eyes.
"The first ironwood tree," said one of the dwarves. "Behold, mortals, a beauty that will never fade."
Jared looked up at the tree with awe, amazed by how one metal had been forged as rough as bark and twisted into branches, while another was as delicate as filigree. Each silver leaf was unique, veined, and curled like a real one. "Why do you call us mortals?" Jared asked.
"Don't you know your own tongue?" a dwarf said and snorted. "It means one who is fated for death. What else should we call you? Your kind wither in a blink of the eye."
He leaned close to the bars of the cage and winked. Several passages led from the cavern out into corridors that were too dim for Jared to see where they led. The cage was wheeled through one, a wide columned hallway that led into a smaller room. Sitting on a throne, hewn from an enormous stalagmite, was another gray-skinned man, this one with a wiry black beard. His eyes shone like green jewels. A metal dog stretched out on a deerskin rug before the throne, the dog's side rising and falling in time with a thin mechanical wheeze, just as if it were really sleeping. On its back, a single key slowly turned. Around the throne were other dwarves, all of them silent.
"My lord Korting," said one of the dwarves, "it is as you said. They have come looking for their sister."
The Korting stood.
"Mulgarath told me you would come. How fortunate you are to be here. How honored that you will see the beginning of the end of human rule."
"Whatever," Jared said. "Where's Mallory?" The Korting scowled.
"Bring her,"
he said, and several of the dwarves immediately shuffled off.
"You would do well to watch what you say. Mulgarath will soon reign over the world, and we, his loyal servants, will be at his side. He will strip the land bare for us, and then we will build a glorious new forest of ironwood trees. We will rebuild the world in silver and copper and iron."
Simon crawled to the edge of the cage. "That doesn't make any sense. What are you going to eat? How are you going to breathe without plants to make oxygen?" Jared smiled at Simon. Sometimes it wasn't so bad having a know-it-all for a twin brother. The courting scowl deepened.
"Do you deny that we dwarves are the greatest craftspeople you have ever seen? You need only to look at my hound there to see our superiority. His silver body is more lovely than any fur. He is faster, he needs no food, and he neither drools nor fawns."
The courting nudged the dog with his foot. The dog turned and stretched before resuming its wheezy sleep. "I don't think that's what Simon was trying to say," Jared began, but he was interrupted by six dwarves entering the room, a long glass box on their shoulders. "Mallory!" Jared stared with a sinking feeling in his stomach. The case looked like a coffin. "What did you do to our sister?" Simon demanded. He looked pale. "She's not dead, is she?"
"Just the opposite," said the dwarf lord with a smile. "She will never die. Look more closely."
The dwarves set down the glass case on an ornately sculpted stand beside Jared and Simon's cage. Mallory's hair had been arranged and hung in one long braid, snaking past her waxy, pale face. A circlet of metal leaves rested above her forehead. Her lips and cheeks were rouged as red as a doll's, yet her hands held the hilt of a silvery blade. She had been dressed in a white gown of frothy lace. Her eyes were closed, and Jared was almost afraid that if she opened them, they would be made of glass. "What did they do to her?" said Simon. "It doesn't seem like Mallory at all."
"Her beauty and youth will never fade," said the courting. "Out of this case she would be doomed to age, death, and decay, the curse of all mortals."
"I think Mallory would rather be doomed," said Jared. The dwarf lord snorted.
"Suit yourself. What have you to give me for her?"
Jared reached into his backpack and brought out the towel-wrapped book. Arthur Spiderwick's field guide. He felt a twinge of guilt at the lie, but ruthlessly quashed it. The courting rubbed his hands together.
Excellent. Just as was anticipated. Let's have the book.
You'll give my sister back to me?
She'll be yours.
Jared held out the fake field guide, and one of the dwarves snatched it through the bars. The dwarf lord did not even bother to look at it.
Take this fine cage to the treasure room and put the glass case beside it.
What? Jared said. But you wanted to trade.
We have traded,
the courting said with a sneer.
You bargain for your sister, but you never bargain for your freedom.
No, you can't. Jared banged his hands on the bars, but it did not keep the dwarves from pushing their moving prison out into a dark corridor. He couldn't look at Simon. After all his yelling at his brother, it was he who was the stupid one, he who hadn't been clever enough. He felt tired and worn out, small and pathetic. He was just a kid. How was he supposed to find a way out of this?